Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business. So should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer of the Denver Broncos. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Mike Evans on assignment, so Cecil Lammy sitting in with Mark Schlereth. And okay, Stink, you got the Houston Texans coming up for the Denver Broncos. This one at NRG Stadium. What are your Stink's keys to victory this week?
Well, I think defensively, let's start there. I think when you look at the Houston Texans, it's obvious you've got to shut down their passing game. You've got to shut down D. Hopkins because the guy is absolutely phenomenal. But to me, it really comes down to second reaction plays. You've got to plaster. When things break down and the quarterback, Watson, starts scrambling around, that's when you have to plaster your guys. So the second reaction type plays, the broken plays, those are the ones they make the biggest plays on. So that's going to be the number one priority is never stop your coverage. Continue to cover even when things seem like they should be over, that ball should be out, because that's where the Houston Texans make the majority of their big plays. And then, you know, from the open it up standpoint on the offensive side of the ball, listen, stay true to what you did. Control the line of scrimmage. Make sure that you use your personnel correctly, your two tight ends, your three tight ends. Protect the edges. Make sure that you protect your young quarterback, and then use a little bit more RPO games. Use a little bit more of the kind of the fake the handoff, read the defense, and throw it where they ain't. When they, you know, when they roll up there, get the X drift going, get the plays that will create chunk yardage plays in one-on-one coverage because of your quarterback's ability to run. And I'm telling you, your quarterback needs to run a little bit. You need to threaten the edge, not only in the boot keep game, but also in the RPO game. And I'm not telling you to put your head down, bury into somebody. I'm not telling you to try to be, you know, Lamar Jackson, but I'm telling you, the threat of that will open up running lanes on the inside and make things easier for your offensive line. So those, to me, are the things this Bronco team needs to do. Lean on some of Drew Lock's strengths, give him some opportunities to have easy one-on-one reads off the play-action game, and then that second reaction stuff on the defensive side of the ball, make sure that you locked in and that you continue to cover when even after 3 or 4 seconds when things seem like they should be gone.
Well, I think that Deshaun Watson in the second play, I love that you highlight this, Stink, because it's not the play that's designed. It's the play after the play. When that play breaks down and Deshaun Watson, right, who I think is better than Lamar Jackson, certainly as a passer. I don't know why people think that's a controversial opinion, but Deshaun Watson is really, really good. So you talk about second play. I want to ask you about second receiver, Will Fuller. Because Nuke Hopkins, Chris Harris Jr. is going to be on Nuke Hopkins, and, you know, that'll help, even though it's Nuke Hopkins. But who in the world's going to stop Will Fuller? And that speed.
Yeah, Will Fuller is, that dude is legit, like 4.28. I mean, he's ridiculous. And they've had a tough time over the years keeping him healthy, but
yeah,
he is a, you know, he's the guy that lifts coverage, that creates open space underneath, whether it's to a running back, you know, whether it's to like you put Fuller and D-Hop on the same side, for instance, you know, in a two-by-two formation, and you run Fuller off, like you run him in at number two and just go and run the dig behind it, you know, underneath it. And it just opens up. It just opens up so much because you'll get guys trying to run, you know, protect the seam, protect the safety underneath. And so it just opens all that real estate up to throw it underneath. So Will Fuller is not only a guy that will, you know, will burn you deep, but he's also a guy that opens up all the underneath stuff, whether it's to a, you know, a shallow crosser, whether it's to a running back out of the backfield, whatever the case may be, however they design it. He's that guy that's really a linchpin to this offense and creating the big plays and opening things up for the other guys. So, I like what they do. And you're 100% right. You know, it's the second reaction stuff. It's the play after the first play. And D-Hop is, Deshaun Watson is as good as there is throwing the football down the football field. And he's, I mean, he's a great young quarterback. I'm with you 100% on the way he throws the football, man. He's
well,
really something.
And then how do you slow him down? Because you think, okay, athletic quarterback, mush rush him, keep in the pocket. He'll kill you from the pocket. So how do you rattle a guy? And who was it at the combine a few years ago after that Alabama-Clemson game said we were trying to hurt him? I think it was Jonathan Williams that said that.
Yeah.
Like, we were trying to hurt him. And they beat the hell out of him in that title game. Alabama did. And Deshaun Watson stood in there.
It was funny because at the time, Rick Smith was the general manager when they drafted.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien didn't want Deshaun Watson, and Rick Smith stood on the table for that guy.
Right, and so he and I were talking. I was like, wow, that's the guy. Like, you got the guy. Now, obviously, I mean, in that draft class, we saw Mitch Trubisky play last night. He actually played pretty well. And you know, Mahomes, you know, came out, and he's been an MVP, and he's been great.
Showtime!
That game that you're talking about, that national championship game, after the first quarter, like, I thought they were going to have to pull Deshaun Watson off the field in an ambulance. Like, the way they hit him,
yeah,
I was like, oh, my gosh, this kid ain't going to survive. And the fact that he came back, that's all I needed to see. Like, that's the kid you want. Like, that's the toughness, you know, not only executing under duress, which he does, but to take the shots he took in that game and you know, answer the bell and then drive his team back to victory, I was like, this is one of the most unbelievable performances I've ever seen. So I was talking to Rick Smith and going, dude, you got the right guy. He is the right guy. And he hasn't, in my mind, he has not disappointed. He's been great.
So how do you stop him, especially if you don't have Vaughn?
Well, to me, you're 100% right. You can't, he'll kill you from the pocket. I just think I always am one of those guys that I'm going to say, let's try to pressure the guy and let's get the guy on the ground. So are you willing to bring five? Are you willing to bring five on a consistent basis or even more at times? And can you hold up in man situations? That to me is, you know, probably my answer, and it's probably why, you know, I'm not a coach, because you probably get beat on that several times. But I would try to mix. I would try to mix pressure, the timing of pressure, as much as I could. And I will tell you this: there's a lot more pressure from this defense than you thought. You know, everybody talks about, oh, Vic's a man coverage guy, and Vic Fangio's, man, last week there was a ton of pressure. Now, part of it is because Phillip Rivers he's turning the ball over like it's a Pez dispenser, you know?
yeah.
And he's just giving Pezes out. So, there's that part of that, but I thought they brought a lot of pressure. And the thing that's interesting watching, like, pressure to me is all about, it's about time, where it comes from, and more importantly, the timing of it, right? And the disguise of it. And I think Vic and this defense, Ed Donatell, they do a tremendous job of disguising their pressure and then the timing of the execution of it. When that pressure comes in regards to the snap, I think they've done a really good job. I thought they were great last week, and it was a big difference in the game. So I think that to me is how you attack that quarterback.
Well, it's Drew Locke's first start on the road, and there was one thing above all else that we need to see from Drew Locke, because if we don't, you may not have your guy. That's next.
Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank Business, banking for good. Member FDIC.
Okay, first road start for Drew Locke with the Denver Broncos stink. What do we need to see? What's the most important thing that this rookie quarterback can show in that first road start?
Well, you know, I think he just, if he adds and builds on the things he did well last week, and I thought that was in and out of the huddle, command of what you're doing as the quarterback. And I thought he was really good on third downs, extending plays. And operating from, you know, operating from kind of situations of duress where he found open targets and delivered the ball accurately, moving the chains on third down. I thought he did a really good job in some of those situations. So I think you have to build on that. And then there's a couple of throws that that you look at and you're just like, dude, you got to be better on that. So I'll give you just off the top of my head. Early they had a 3-by-1 formation, three receivers on one side. The number two receiver on that side was Noah Fant, and they ran like a little comeback on the outside. They had man, and Noah Fant ran the seam. And so you have on that particular throw, you have the hole from the middle of the where you line up on the hash or right in that area, to that whole outside sideline. Because on the outside of that, you're running a little stop route
How are they taught to throw that? Because some guys are taught to give him that sideline cushion and some guys are taught to throw down that seam. How are they taught in this system?
You're taught to, as he presses that seam, you throw it on the opposite shoulder, like to work. They call it you ever see on the practice field, they have a red line?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the red line is about 5 yards off the sideline. And that's where, when you're outside, that's where you want to push. Like if you have a 9 route and you get jammed, like, so if you're outside the numbers, cornerbacks, if they're in some type of man coverage, they will make sure they have an inside leverage point on you. They will jam you, and they want to jam you toward the sideline. And so they always tell receivers to, once you get by that jam, to work back toward that red line. And so that red line gives you 5 yards of real estate so your quarterback can throw you back toward the sideline. So once you get down that seam and you're on the edge because you're getting inside leverage in that 3-by-1 formation, give your quarterback an opportunity to throw you back toward the red line. And Drew put it on the opposite side. I mean, it was a bad throw, right?
Yeah.
So there's that one. Then they had a corner out of a, I think it was a 3-tight formation or maybe a 2-tight formation, but a corner route, that Hireman really did a great job of pressing back in toward the middle of the field and then hitting the corner in man coverage. And it's wide open, and Drew actually drifts, runs that way, and throws it about 8 yards over his head. And it's going to be a 30-yard gain. So those are two throws off the top of my head that you can't miss those throws, right? Those are throws that an NFL quarterback makes, you know, at least 70% of the time or 80% of the time. Those things are on, they need to be on target. And then if the defensive player makes a tremendous play, then that's, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. But those are two plays that should have been, both of them should have been explosives, 30-plus yard plays. Both of them were incomplete with horribly thrown footballs.
Right. What about the pick? That's something after the game. And I get it, everyone's excited about Drew Lock. They should be, right? But there's a little bit of the old Eddie Murphy throw a starving man a cracker. He'll be like, what is that, saltine? That's the best egg cracker I've ever had. Like, and I asked Drew about his pick because I wanted to know about that instead of blowing bubbles at him like everybody else. And I get it, everybody's excited. But, like, he talked openly about how in college he could fit that in. He can't do that in the pros. Do you kind of forgive him a little bit because of that arm? He loves to zip into tight windows because that pick, that pick was pretty obvious. He just didn't see it. He didn't see middle of the field.
Yeah, well, and those things do close. They close a lot quicker than you think they're going to close because those guys in zone, reading your eyes, understanding. Like, the thing about defensive players in the National Football League is it's a profession. So you're really well coached and you understand out of formations what teams are going to do. So based on formations and based on, you know, there's just certain things that every team does. There's certain routes and route combinations that everybody does. And these guys, I mean, they study it. Like, the best I've ever seen do it is Luke Kuechly. And, you know, he just knows what's coming based upon, like, what you do. And, like, a lot of things, you know, you're a hook defender. You're not even, like, you know, you're not even supposed to be reading outside, but, you know, he's reading what the route combination is and knows where the ball is going to go. And I think that's one of the things, especially for young quarterbacks, but you see it with old guys too, you know, where you think you're in great shape and those guys are so athletic, they're so gifted, and they do such a good job of anticipating. You know, we always talk about anticipatory throwers that throw it before the receiver even comes out of his break, and you've got to be able to do that. Well, defenders are anticipatory too. They see what's coming. They see the formation. They go, oh, here's that play.
Right.
It's coming. I've seen this before. And, you know, all of a sudden you're in zone and you know something's coming back the opposite way. You run, you know, I always say if you run like, if you're in a 2x2 formation, you run number two out, guess who's coming in? Number one, right? And if you know that number two is going to the flat, so you know you're going to get, you know, a slant or a curl by number one, and you get into that throwing lane and you get in a little bit late, you know what I'm saying? Because you bait, you pick that off all the time. So those are the things a young quarterback, he hasn't seen that speed. He hasn't seen that level of preparation. This is no longer college where you only get the guys for 20 hours a week, right? And you could fit that ball in 100% of the time.
Yeah.
This is pro football, and those guys are well-versed on the other side.
Yeah, and go back and watch that pick. He just should have thrown the screen. Royce Freeman was right there. Just, like, dump it off, and that's fine. Live to fight another day, and then handle that crowd. How, and he's played in big games, SEC, four-year starter, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how's he going to handle that crowd at NRG?
Well, to me... If you run the ball, you do what they did. You know, you run the ball, you protect your quarterback. There's not a bunch of sacks, so there's not a big feeding frenzy there. And you stay, you know, you stay short and underneath and quick. So if you're in third down and three, you know, you're running all sticks or whatever. You know, you're just doing those things. You got an opportunity. You know, you got an opportunity to be successful. I tell you what, you're in third down and seven plus, and they're bringing the house, and you're getting your quarterback hit, then it's going to be a long day, and that crowd is going to definitely affect you. So to me, it's just about staying on a third down alone. Being successful on first down is how you handle a crowd. Being in second down and five minus, second down and five, second and four, you know, that'll shut a crowd up. The crowds are pretty sophisticated. They understand. You know, that'll shut the crowd up pretty quickly.
Right. We'll see how Drew Locke handles this in his first road start. But the best thing that I saw against the Chargers, Stink, is that the game wasn't too big for him. And this is the year of the backup quarterback, by the way.
Right.
And you know this, watching every game around the league. Like, we've seen so many backups. Sometimes it works out, you know, Gardner Minshew, right? Sometimes it doesn't. Luke Falk. And the biggest thing you look for is, like, is his head swimming? Is he kind of scrambled a little bit upstairs?
Right.
I didn't see that with Locke.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. And like I said, on third down, like there was some on third down where it just looked like he was having fun. Like, hey, let's go play. You know, let's go play, man. And what I liked is it wasn't just, you know, put your head down and run. It was buy time, slide, get away from pressure and find somebody. There he is. Bam, hit a tight end. You know, bam, hit somebody in the middle of the football field. I thought he did a really good job with that stuff.
We'll see what Drew Locke can do in his first road start on Sunday against the Houston Texans. Is Rich Scangarello on the hot seat? We get to that four down territory next.
Be quiet, I'm answering the question.
This is four down territory.
Let's talk football.
Personal foul, 69. Offense, he's giving them the business.
That guy's pretty good. If you like 6'5", 230-pound quarterbacks, laser, rocket arms.
It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Chicken parm, you taste so good.
Ready, Greg. First down.
Feel all right. He's getting better. You know, I think he's ready to go to a certain degree. I'm not sure exactly how we'll do it yet, you know, but he's going to be ready to go. He'll be active.
There's Broncos head coach Vic Fangio talking about Juwan James. Will he be ready to go? In a limited role, it sounds like, Stink, is Juwan James emotionally ready to get out there this week against the Texans?
Well, let's hope so. I I'd like to think that he's ready. I mean, I think he's had, you know, plenty of time, and obviously he's, you know, he's quote unquote taking his time on that, but I hope he's ready because they, you know, certainly, if he can play, you know, and if he's healthy, he certainly helps them. He's certainly an upgrade at the tackle position. So, I hope that he's ready. I hope that he's healthy enough, and I hope that he's over the mental hurdle of, you know, going out there not quite ready and re-injuring himself. So hopefully that works out.
I know you had a million surgeries, so I don't know if you had any mental hurdles to come back from those, but is that how big of a thing? Oh, yeah. Is it just different for each guy how big that hurdle is?
Oh, yeah, there is no question. And all, obviously, when you're hurt, man, it's hard when you lack trust or it, because it doesn't matter how long you rehab or how long, you know, you've done it and how much the medical team says you're cleared to play. It's altered. It feels different. You know, it's not quite the same. And it's a hard thing. You know, mentally, it's a hard thing to overcome. So I get it. I mean, I'm not, you know, the whole mental, Vic Fangio didn't do him any favors when he said he's, you know, mentally and emotionally he's not quite ready to play. Like those are my criticisms of Vic. There's certain things you probably should just not say in public. Like you just probably shouldn't. Like you shouldn't refer to your offensive coordinator as the offensive coach has wanted to take a knee, but I came to the rescue. Like that stuff you shouldn't do probably.
You know, makes it interesting for us, though. Yeah, so we'll take it. Next in four down territory.
Second down.
No, it's not personal. For me, it's just another game on the schedule. I mean, obviously with me having ties there for 9 years and, you know, never been in this situation going back to a place where I played before, but be good to see some familiar faces and stuff. But I mean, other than that, it's another game on the schedule, you know, and I prepare the same way I prepare any other week.
There's K-Jack, Kareem Jackson, and, well, Stink, do you believe him when he says it's not personal playing against his old team, the Houston Texans?
No, I think 100% it's personal. It's always personal when a team tells you essentially by not giving you a contract that they don't think you're a fit, that you're not in their plans. I mean, you know, you're going to go out and prepare the same as you do every week, and you're going to be ready to play. But, yeah, there's a little extra juice flowing when it's your former team, and your former team has essentially said, see you around, sayonara, we don't really want you.
Well, and with Kareem Jackson, here's the thing, Stink. Like, everyone says, oh, these guys missed on Juwan James, they missed on Bryce Callen. They didn't miss on Kareem Jackson as a free agent.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah, no. Not, I mean, that guy has been... He's been better than good. I mean, he has been great. So he's been a lot of fun to watch. There's no question about it.
Outstanding. Next in four down territory.
Third down.
No, I think it's more about execution. I mean, it's not an aggressiveness issue. You look at the play calls. Or, you know, as the second half, we threw it more than we ran it. Like, we're, I think, 10 pass, 9 run. It's just, in the end, you got to stay on the field on third down. You got to be tighter with your execution. And the reality of it is, like, we're young.
There's Rich Scangarello talking about being young. They're feeling young. Are they aggressive enough, though? Because the, you know, we're not conservative talk has been kind of the talk over there at UCL Training Center this week. Is Scangarello correct saying, like, it's not about aggression?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've managed the game. You know, they've managed the game the way they feel like they have to manage it to win. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that. Like, I don't look at that as like, oh, you cowards. Like, I would rather, you know, have a little coward in me and say I'm going to protect my quarterback and I'm going to make sure we don't lose by 30 and give us a chance to win. Like, a lot of people want open it up. Well, if you open it up based upon what you got, you're probably going to lose. So, you know, I mean, you can't, I guess you just can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta execute.
Like, one of the biggest things that, you know, that I've been taught by some of the people that I lean on for football knowledge, you know, some of the coaches that I talk to and guys like Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan and One of the things that has been really, just really, kind of really ingrained in my way of thinking is the best coaches understand the problems. Right? They understand the problems that the defense represents. They understand the problems that a coverage represents. They understand the problems that an individual player, a matchup represents. They also understand their own internal problems. They understand what they can do. They understand what they can't do. They understand where they're, you know, where they have liabilities. And they devise game plans based upon maximizing the matchups, you know, maximizing the matchups against the opponent and minimizing their own weaknesses. And when you've got a bunch of weaknesses that you have to minimize, it makes it that much harder to try to, you know, maximize some of the matchup opportunities.
To that, I say double true. Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Oh, no, I mean, I want to play football. You know, I still got an opportunity to go out there and get sacks and make plays. And, you know, as long as it's a small opportunity, small window for me to do that, you know, I'm going to do it. But, you know, whatever, you know, my team and whatever the guys, you know, want me to do, I'm going to do it.
There's Von Miller. Should he be shut down for the rest of the year? Should he play this Sunday against the Texans? What do you do with Von Miller, who's trying to fight through this, you know, kind of minor, hopefully not more major, knee thing?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would make sure that if he's going to play, because he wants to play, and I'd like him to play. So if he's going to play, make sure he's healthy. Make sure he's good to go. Make sure that he's not limited in any way, shape, or form. And if he's limited, just don't play him. I'm not saying put him on IR. I'm just saying don't play him until he's Von Miller, until he's good to go. You know, you want him out there. You want Von Miller to play. There's no question about it. So when he's 100% ready and he's good to go, then play him. But, you know, I believe you're a rebuilding football team. So, you know, I believe you need to rebuild. He's your biggest bargaining chip. Now, I think there's probably some people over at Dove Valley that disagree with me. You know, it's all just, if we just had a better play caller, or we just had, you know, whatever, we'd be all right. So I don't buy into that. So, if you are planning on revamping your organization, especially on the offensive side of the ball, then he would be one of your biggest, bargaining chips.
And how do you know if Vaughn's ready or not? Because he wants to play, he's going to push to play.
Right.
How do you judge that as a coach?
I think you have to, you know, you have to see where he is. You have to see where he is today. Then you have to work him out pregame, you know, on Sunday, where there's no adrenaline pumping, you know, 2.5 hours before the game, and get a good assessment of what you think he truly is, and then, you know, make a judgment that's best, not for, you know, that's best for Vaughn, but best for your organization, so to speak. You know, make sure that we protect our player, but also protect our investment, in case somebody gives you an offer that you can't refuse.
And that's a wrap for Four Down Territory here at every single morning at 7:30 a.m. right here on Schlereth at Evans. Mike Evans on assignment, Cecil Lammy sitting in, and well, is Juwan James going to play? And when he does, they'll rotate at right tackle. What does that mean for left tackle? We check in with our Denver 7 Broncos insider, Troy Rank, next. Mike Evans on assignment today on this Football Friday. Cecil Lammy sitting in. We're checking in with our Denver 7 Broncos insider, Troy Rank. He's presented by Tranny Law. And, Troy, we just got done talking about Von Miller. Should he play? Will he play? What's the latest that you have on Von Miller's status for Sunday?
Yeah, the longer he talked yesterday, the less likely it seemed like he would play. You know, it pained him to miss last week, as you saw in the presser. Yep. The minute he cried over it, he couldn't tell the coaches that he wasn't going. He kind of left it up to the training staff to put him on the inactive list. And they left that spot open way up right to the very deadline to see if he could go. You know, I'll talk to Von today and see where it stands. But I would say it's leaning toward less likely right now. I asked him about playing on turf. That is the same place where he tore his ACL 6 years ago. He said that's not the issue. It's just, does he feel like he can be, in his words, make exotic moves in his pass rush game? If he was an inline player, I think he'd be fine. It's the, you know, the turning and then the bend that's causing him issue with that knee. So we'll see. And they've got to really be cautious here, because the last thing you want is for him to tear something and to go into the off season having surgery. So they are because of their record, his situation, they're in a tough spot here. But right now it seems less likely he plays, but I'll learn more today after practice.
What exactly do you have an exact kind of diagnosis, or what exactly is the injury is what I'm trying to ask you. Do you know?
Sprained MCL on his left knee. He hurt it in the first half against Buffalo on attempting a sack of Josh Allen. I don't know if he caught friendly fire or if he caught their tackle. It's a little unclear when he described it. I went through the video yesterday, parts of it, trying to find the play. And there was one play where he kind of got on a sack where he kind of got caught up in the pile, where it looked like his knee might have been hit then. That was in the first half, but he described it as a play where he didn't get a sack. So it's hard on the video I watched to determine what play that might have been, but it's an MCL sprain, and he just is trying to figure out, can he be good enough to not be a liability, in his words. So we'll see going forward.
Is Troy Ranker, Denver 7 Broncos insider, presented by Tranny Law. Troy, how do they spring Philip Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't been as good at run blocking this year as they were last year, in part because, you know, they just don't have a lot of weapons, so teams can choose to take Philip away. They've had issues right at the point of attack. I mean, Philip, we all know, I mean, he'll run through darkness. He has the courage to get through the middle, but it's getting through the middle to get him to that next level. That's when he's amazing, because he can outrun guys in space and get that, you know, turn a 7-yard, you know, 3-yarder into 11 to 25-yarder. It's that initial hole that's not opening like it did last year. Now remember, he's still on pace for 1,000 yards. He just hasn't had the big games like we saw last year. He's only been over 100 yards once. So how do they get him going? I mean, you emphasize it, but it's almost, to me, you'd want to play backward and get the pass going to set up the run, and they just really don't have the weapons, Cecil, to do that outside of Cortland Sutton. Again, I'm more bullish on Noah Fant than most, but he's inconsistent and yeah, Typical of a young player. They need to go probably play a little backward to get it going, and they just don't. They're not set up to do that, honestly. But Philip, again, it's just because he hasn't had the big games. He's still on pace for over 1,000 yards. So it's not like it's been a disappointing season. It's just been a different. It's 60 yards here, 70 yards there. He had the 114 yards against the Chargers in October, but we just haven't seen the big game yet.
You know, Troy, we've talked about the Jason Lockenfora report, and everybody kind of poo-pooed it, and there's nothing to see here type of thing. And then you hear a press conference after a game where my offensive coach wanted to take a knee, but we went for it. And so I would just ask you, you're over there all the time. Is there tension between the offense and defense? Is there, some tension between Vic Fangio and the offensive coaching staff?
Well, there's been disagreements over how they've approached games, no question. It came to a head during that Colts game. But that, again, Flacco's criticism that day was as much directed at Vic Fangio as it was Scangarello, you know, in terms of they just shut it down and went into their timid turtle strategy. But there have been games where, you know, there felt like there was a disconnect. In this case specifically, I think it involves more of Vic Fangio not understanding he's the head coach of a football team and still thinking like a defensive coordinator. He reminds me at times like Wade Phillips, where you say something kind of flippantly as a defensive coordinator and it's kind of funny. But as a head coach, when you say they didn't want to go to it, I did, it sounds like an us against them, where, you know, Rich described it as I asked, do you want to kneel or go for it? And he said, go for it. So they weren't telling him, I want to kneel. It's like, and he said, that's the head coach's decision. But yeah, there's no question, Mark, a first year head coach and a first year coordinator, there's been rocky patches that they're still trying to iron out, get a feel for how Rich calls the game, how Vic wants the game called. That's been part of it when you deal with a guy in Rich that's never called games at this level. So it's fun to watch these next 4 weeks. So we'll see where it goes from here. But, yeah, it's definitely something worth watching. I know, Mark, they don't want to change offensive coordinators again. Then you'd be 4 on 4 years. They really want to find continuity with that role.
He's Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, presented by Tranny Law. Troy, we certainly appreciate your time. We'll see what the Broncos can get done this week, huh?
You got it, guys. Take care. Have a great show.
All right, there we have him. Troy Rank joining us. And, okay, let's stick with this discussion about Rich Scangarello and what this offense needs to do. And really, Stink, I want to pick your brain because what Troy was saying when I asked him about Philip Lindsay, and I did that for a reason. Because Philip Lindsay, you know, the 17 for 50, 13 for 57, you know, those type of games, they could use a little bit more. What do you do when teams are stacking the box against you? Like you'll see the Broncos regularly get, especially over the last couple of games.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because then you start seeing, okay, do you have, can you get out of, you know, what you always do? You know, can you get out of just the wide zone right and the wide zone left? And where is, you know, where are your adjunct plays to that? Where are your, what they call in the league, you know, when you talk to coaches around the league, they'll call them scheme runs. Where are your scheme runs? And what that means is, what runs are we going to get away? Like, what runs are we going to execute based upon that defense and the scheme that defense runs? So when you scheme a run, you're like, okay, this particular player, let's say it's a upfield penetrator. Okay. So let's say they've got a defensive tackle who's an upfield penetrator. Well, how are we going to scheme that guy? A guy that's always pass rushing, right? Well, we're going to run some inside trap and some wham against him. Right?
Right.
We want to run inside wham, we can run outside wham. Meaning we can take the tight end from the outside and trap him the opposite way, the opposite ear hole. So he doesn't see it coming from his front side, but it's coming from his backside. And so there are different ways to take advantage of that from a scheme standpoint. And, you know, you have to be able to do that. Like, how about we get to the outside? What are the outside kind of scheme runs that we can get to if they've got like a, let's say they got a guy, that, you know, that constantly, you know, gets pinned or constantly, you know, wants to take inside moves, and not protect the outside edge, or they're so stout inside that we want to try to break them outside really quick and they don't have good run support corners. Let's say their corners are real cover guys and they don't really want to stick their nose in there and make tackles, right?
Right.
All right. So here's three runs right off the top of my head that you can get outside on. You can get outside on some type of pitch or toss, you know, with kind of crack receivers. So receivers motioning down and hitting the outside linebackers or the defensive ends, right? So you can run pitch or toss. You can run flip, which they tried to run last week.
Right, and everyone lost their mind. Like, why are they doing that? Like,
right.
Execute it.
Now, yeah, execute it. And I will say that oftentimes flip, especially short yardage, and this is where, again, personnel is going to hurt them. Like, they ran flip out of one back. Now, they had the edges blocked and stuff, but where flip works the best is when you open up and fake the dive to the fullback, right? And then flip it out. But they don't have a fullback on their roster because he got hurt. So they're using a tight end to fill that position, which doesn't really threaten people because you don't think you're going to give it to the tight end, right? So he doesn't draw as much attention. So, like, they're limited there a little bit because of the personnel issues and the injury. But so crack or toss or, you know, pitch or toss with kind of crack blocking, and then, you know, flip is another way to get outside. And then, you know, the jet sweeps. Well, you know, most of the jet sweeps that we've run have been to the tight end. So, you know, it hasn't really worked. So, you know, I mean, but that's what we would call kind of scheme runs. So how are we going to create, you know, a couple of explosives off of scheme based upon what you do? But here's the deal. You don't ever go into a game plan thinking, okay, all we're going to do is scheme run them. You still have to understand that your run game and what you do on a consistent basis is what's married to play action and what creates the deception. And so, you have to stay with what you have put on film, and try to create. You know, you gotta still be able to do that stuff because all your play action, you know, completely marries to that. I mean, you can't go out there and say, all we're going to do is scheme run these guys.
Right.
You got to stick with what your base or what your core is. The other thing, you know, again, and I feel like I'm just defending Rich and I don't have a personal relationship with Rich. He's not a guy that I text with. I don't have his phone number. So this is just me, you know, trying to give you guys like what I think based upon, you know, how difficult I know this is and the personnel issues that you have. So it's not like I've got some vested interest and I'm just, you know, Rich is my buddy and I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to help him. I'm not. I think the other thing you have to understand is you go into a game plan with a rookie quarterback getting his first start who's had 3 days of, you know, first team practice. How limited is your game plan anyhow?
Right.
I mean, how much did you pare down your playbook? 40%? Did you take 40% of your plays out? Like, so understand to me what he was able to do on Sunday to get a win was pretty remarkable.
You can take 40% of your plays out, but man, you're talking about inside wham, outside wham. One thing you never take out though.
Regular wham. That's right. You cannot get enough regular wham in your offense.
You must have wham in your offense.
You put the boom boom into my heart, man. I might have to work that into my broadcast this week. The Chargers run some inside trap and some wham. Maybe we can get a little jitterbug going, right? You put the boom boom into this play. Wham.
If only Philip Rivers could be like George Michael, man.
I don't think my broadcast partner, who just turned 77 the other day, I don't think he's going to get my wham reference. I don't know how many people would get that reference if I actually worked that into the broadcast.
That's what makes it a great reference, though.
Right, right?
Yeah.
Somebody will hear it and appreciate it. Most people won't even know that it happened. I do this, like, this my whole career is all about entertaining myself. So, you know, whether you like it or not, I don't really give a rip. That's all I want to do is entertain myself.
I love the wham play because it puts the boom boom into my heart. See, that's all I've got to say.
I love the wham play. Wait a minute. I'm going to actually write this down.
Okay.
Just so I don't forget. That's exactly how I will say it.
I love the wham play because it puts the boom boom into my heart. And see, it's so subtle that the people that do get it, they will appreciate it at such a high level. Most people won't. They're like, man, he must love that wham play. But the people that know. Puts a boom boom heart. Into my heart.
Into my heart.
Mm-hmm.
from my lips to God's ears, please let the Chargers run wham.
What? Just please. Ask Anthony Lynn, right? You're going to meet with Anthony today, probably, right?
Saturday, yeah. I'll talk to Bullwinkle. I'll see if I can get Bullwinkle. You can throw some wham in there.
I want to
make a wham reference. Oh, that's going to be beautiful. That is going to be, I'm telling you what, I can't even, no, I'm so excited right now. It's not even funny.
It's fantastic.
Gosh, that's great. It is fantastic.
This is KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.